The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
At a rally over the weekend in Pennsylvania, former US President Donald Trump took aim at the current Vice President Kamala Harris, claiming that she's a socialist lunatic and that he is much better looking than her.
We're not going to take it anymore. We have a country to save. And how about the fake news? Oh, look at them all back there. Look at all those cameras. Look at all those cameras. Wow. Look at all those cameras, all those fake writers. Look at them. I mean, Time Magazine. Think of this. Time Magazine doesn't have a picture of her. They have this unbelievable artist drawing her. And I said, is that Sophia Loren? I couldn't. Who might that be? Is that Elizabeth Taylor? They say she was a beautiful woman. Who is it that's so beautiful? Drawing. It's a drawing. They took a lot of pictures. It didn't work out. So they hired a sketch artist. I said, I'm sure, oh, they must be celebrating the great life and times of the magnificently beautiful Sophia Loren. And you're not allowed to say this anymore. You know, David, don't ever get caught in this trap, David, please. Don't ever call a woman beautiful, because that'll be the end of your political career. Please. I want to make your life much easier, David. But, you know, I mean, I read a so-called Republican who Ronald Reagan didn't like, by the way, and she didn't like him, but she got credit for being this Reagan speechwriter. Highly overrated. I don't know anything about her. I don't know her. Treats me badly, but that's okay. She called it wrong. She's called it wrong now for about 8 years. But she said one thing that got me. She said Kamala has one big advantage. She's a very beautiful woman. She's a beautiful woman. So I decided to go back and reread the clause. I'm not saying he's, but I say that I am much better looking than her. I think I'm much better. Much better. I'm a better looking person than Kamala.
Now, how weird is that? And then just in advance of the day, which is today, when Joe Biden will endorse his vice president as the Democratic nominee, he made a claim that Biden hates Kamala Harris.
Joe Biden hates her, okay? Hates her. You don't mind if I go off teleprompter for a second, do you? Joe Biden hates her. This was an overthrow of a president. This was an overthrow. They went out. You know, I spent $100 million fighting Joe Biden. They told him he couldn't win. His debate performance wasn't the best ever. But they said mine was the best ever. But they said his debate performance wasn't. I look forward to debating her, by the way. She'll be easier. She'll be easier than him. Her policies are so bad. Her policy. Remember, her father was a Marxist economic professor. He was a Marxist, an avowed Marxist. This is not what we want in this country.
So that's Donald Trump in full flow, throwing red meat to his base at that meeting in Pennsylvania. I'm joined by Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Morning to you, Pat.
When Tim Walz branded himself and J.D. Vance as weird, Donald Trump seems to be determined to fulfill that prophecy.
Well, you know, how do you deal with a narcissist named Donald? The fact is that what Tim Walz quite rightly calls weird, this is Trump's standard operating procedure. He did it in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. He tried to do it in 2020 against Joe Biden. He's now come back and doubled down on it in 2024 against Kamala Harris. I think the issue here is not whether or not it's weird. It's just simply Donald Trump, and it's what you're going to get. It's whether it's going to work this time. And I think the significant thing that's come out in the last month has been two things. I think the first thing that has to be emphasized is that in contrast to the negative, the destructive, the insult politics of Donald Trump, you do have a positive alternative being put forth by the Harris-Waltz campaign. They have designed this very carefully to make that contrast, and I think they're succeeding. I think the second point is, in part because of that success, and perhaps the most important point right now on the Trumpist side, is that his advisors, his donors, even key Trump-supporting politicians are telling him, you've got to stop the insult politics. You've got to dial this down. You've got to focus on the issues. You've got to take Harris and Waltz on issues like the economy and immigration. And Lindsey Graham, Trump's longtime friend and a senator, he went public with it yesterday, told a major U.S. news program, if Trump continues like this, he will lose the election.
He's not good at the issues, though. That's his problem. He likes to speak in generalities. You know, wasn't America better under me? Wasn't the economy better? Weren't prices lower? Da-da-da-da-da-da. This is the way he speaks. He's not a master of detail.
Yeah, but it doesn't take detail, Pat, to put out the line, even if it's largely based on misinformation, which is that Kamala Harris, as part of the Biden administration, is responsible for serious economic problems in the United States. You know, you do that by citing the inflation rate from 2022 rather than the inflation rate of 2024. You do it by ignoring the growth in domestic product. But you could at least make that general point. And he was supposed to do that a few days ago in another rally. But you're right. I mean, when he tried to make that point, or if he even thought about making that point, he veered off of it within a couple of minutes. Similar issue with immigration. You know, that should be an issue that the Trumpists use to attack the Democrats. Again, quite often using misinformation, but it's one that whips up the fear factor. But when was the last time that Trump made a detailed point about immigration that stopped?
Now, the question of his comfort zone, I mean, when he asks his crowd, do you mind if I go off the teleprompter, and they cheer him to the rafters because they know what's coming. He's going to riff. Do his greatest hits, as it were, and he riffs about Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, and all the rest of it, and that's what he's comfortable doing. He's going to disparage Kamala Harris, but short of that, there doesn't seem to be another angle of attack for him.
No, I think, again, it's really interesting that the playbook that he thinks will work was the one that did work with Hillary Clinton. Where he literally stalked her across the debate stage, where he put out all the misogynist attacks, where he was able to succeed with those misogynist attacks, despite the fact, remember, that he was accused by numerous women of sexual assault and caught bragging about it, of course, in the Access Hollywood tape. Here we are 8 years later, and he thinks he can do the same thing. Why should I change the playbook? Because it's worked for me in the past. He does not adjust according to the opponent. He's not made any adjustment to Tim Walz, who balances Kamala Harris. And I think the issue here is that they brought back Corin Lewandowski, who was part of that 2016 campaign. Indeed, was campaign manager at one point. They brought him back in. Can he finally get a hold of Trump? You know, can anyone get a hold of Trump? And I have to tell you that I personally am just sort of echoing what you're saying. I don't think he knows any other speed other than the insulting at full pace. And I don't think it'll personally work, but it's still a toss-up race.
Now, what are the polls saying? Because we know that Kamala Harris, particularly after the addition of Tim Walz to the ticket, she's enjoying something of an uncritical honeymoon.
Yeah, right now you've got a situation. Let's start with the three key swing states, which are Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. The Democrats win all three of those states. They narrowly win the election. Biden was behind by about 4 to 6 points in those states. A series of polls, not just one poll, puts Harris up by about 4% in Michigan, a couple of percent up in Wisconsin. It's a toss-up in Pennsylvania. So she's overturned Trump's lead there. But what was even more interesting is what happened last weekend, because the New York Times and Siena polled four other states that were vital in 2020. Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, all of which the Democrats won. North Carolina, which Trump won. Harris is up in two of those states, Arizona and North Carolina, and she's only slightly behind in the other two, in Georgia and Nevada, which means that not only has Trump's lead been erased in the three most important states, now the Trump campaign's on the defensive because they're starting to face the risk that they can't even defend four more states that they must have to win the election.
Now, the references to Sophia Loren and Elizabeth Taylor, quite remarkable. If you're trying to woo young voters, and he clearly is when he puts out a fake video claiming Taylor Swift advocates supporting him. But that stuff was weird. I mean, what fraction of the population in the United States who are voters would remember the heyday of Sophia Loren and Elizabeth Taylor? Because it ages him.
People who are my age, and that's quite old. And that's a really, really good point, Pat, because, you know, your listeners will know that up until a month ago, it was all about how he is the vibrant candidate who happens to be younger than Joe Biden. Now that's gone. Harris is younger than him, and Harris comes across as, you know, your pretty cool aunt or even your fashionable older sister. And what the Harris campaign immediately did, it wasn't just Taylor Swift. They immediately pulled memes from Charlie XCX, who apparently is a British singer that appeals to the young folks in the States. They immediately pulled support from other prominent young artists. And they're going across TikTok and Instagram, across social media with this. And again, it is Donald Trump doesn't exist in that world. Donald Trump doesn't know anything other than there's a woman named Taylor Swift who tries to get out the vote, and he hates that. So how does Trump respond? He's not working with his advisors. He's not working with the social media teams. And he keeps going back to that base. And again, we loop back to where we start from. And that is Donald Trump's base is not enough to win this election. Kamala Harris's base is not enough to win this election. You must get voters who are undecided right now, who are in the middle, and undecided young people are part of that mix that they're going to have to reach out to, or at least that Trump should reach out to.
Now, there's something being reported over the last few days, and that is, and we'll use the shorthand, Republicans for Kamala.
Yeah, you might have had this in a different guise in terms of Never Trumpers in the past few years. And what you've got is people tend to forget this because of all the talk about the Trumpist base and all the talk about how the Republican Party has been purged or had to bow down to Trump. There is still a segment of the party who do not want him. In fact, not only do not want him as president, they think he is tearing down the Republican Party. And while a lot of those folks have been silent, think about Senator Mitt Romney from past years. Think about Representative Liz Cheney, who was driven out of the House. They now are organizing. There is a grassroots campaign. Now, does it mean that they will turn out a lot of Republicans to vote for Harris in November? Possibly not. But again, elections sometimes are decided not by who votes for you, but who sits on their hands. In 2016, Democrats sat on their hands, cost Hillary Clinton the election. Could that happen with Republicans in 2024?
Well, also, if you're voting down the ticket as well, it could influence the makeup of the two houses of Congress.
Absolutely vital point. Some of the reason why these Republicans are organizing, if not to call for a vote for Kamala, but at least to call for a distancing from Trump, is they think he will drag down candidates for the Senate and the House. And again, a reminder to listeners out there that both of those houses are on knife edges in terms of who gets the majority. So obviously, you know, if Trump becomes president, a Democratic majority in Congress sort of puts up a firewall against him. Conversely, if the Republicans lose the White House, they at least want one House of Congress to have some type of power in Washington.
Now, the question of whether Trump would try to pervert the whole electoral system. When he was in power, he obviously put people in all sorts of high places, notably the Supreme Court, but also at other levels. Judge Cannon, for example, one of his appointees, who's certainly operating on his behalf, it would appear, in the court case over which she presides. But he's done it right down through the whole system, including in Georgia, where the electoral board, one guy has been accused of actually looking for a job in the EPA post-retirement in exchange for doing Trump's bidding on the electoral board.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, you actually had the spectacle at the Republican National Convention that other people who were delegates there for Trump also had been accused of electoral malpractice over the 2020 attempt to overturn the election. So, you know, the tactic of the Trumpist has been is that you take over. You absolutely take over institutions. It was part of a wider Republican project with the judiciary, as you mentioned. It is part of what is called Project 2025, which your listeners may have heard of. To boil that document down, you take control of the U.S. agencies by putting in political appointments and you bend them to your will. But what you're specifically saying, Pat, here is an important thing, that even as Donald Trump will say, rigged election, rigged election, rigged election, the biggest threat of a rigged election is not going to come from the Democrats. It's not going to come from those opposed to Donald Trump. It's going to come from state election officials who will try to protect Trump if he faces defeat in certain states like Georgia.
Meantime, the Democrats will have a bit of a hooly this week.
You can say that. They'll be in Chicago. And it's going to be an interesting contrast. In 1968, Chicago marked a disastrous year for the Democratic Party. You know, having Lyndon Johnson choosing not to run, Bobby Kennedy, possible nominee, assassinated, the convention descended into chaos with mass protest. Now, what the Democrats are looking at, here we are, 56 years later, is can they run a convention which is going to continue the momentum of Harris and Waltz, continue that positive vibe, if you want to use that word, as well as laying out, you know, their general policy approaches. The risk is that some are not meeting as well. You're going to have protests there, especially over the Israel-Gaza issue and Israel's mass killings. I think you will see those protesters there, but I don't think they will overturn the convention. I think they'll get recognition, in fact, even from Harris and others, that this is an important issue. But I think you're going to see a largely unified Democratic Party. In contrast to 1968, and dare I say it, in contrast to 2016, when a guy named Donald Trump did pull off the upset.
There's a text here. At the debate, Kamala Harris asked Donald Trump, how much is a loaf of bread or a liter of milk or a pint of milk, a gallon of milk? They buy them in gallons in the United States. And would he know?
Probably not. I mean, a few days ago when he was supposed to speak on the economy, the stunt was that they surrounded him with cereal boxes and other basic items like, oh, no, here is a man of the people. You know, Donald Trump, you know, whatever else you say about him, is not a man of the people. Donald Trump is a man who's led a very, very privileged life and has probably not had to go down and buy a box of cereal from the local supermarket. But, of course, that's not the point. You know, if we revert back to Trump, he whips up myths. He whips up scared, you know, phrases about what's happening about America decline, American carnage. And he applies that to the economy. In the next week and leading up to that debate on September 10th, the question will be not really whether Trump has commands of the issues, but can the Democrats present a party which recognizes that a lot of Americans still face economic difficulties in what has been a very, very difficult 15 years since the Great Recession? Can they say we're the adults in the room versus this guy who happens to really be a reality TV star at best?
Scott, thank you very much for joining us. Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.